This episode of Daily Drive is brought to you by TradeRev, the digital dealer-to-dealer auction platform revolutionizing automotive sales. Give your auction inventory a fast, one-way ticket off your lot with TradeRev, a car global company.
I'm Jason Stein, publisher of Automotive News, and this is Daily Drive. It's Wednesday, July 29th. If you talk about the top brass in the automotive retail space, there have been few names more prominent than Sandy Schwartz. As the president of Cox Automotive, Sandy has spent a decade building a reputation as a strategist, acquisition guru, and relationship builder. He cultivated the feedback from the giants in the industry, Penske, Hendrick, Sewell, and he listened to their pain points. He also created Cox Automotive into a force in the vendor space. The acquisitions through the years propelled Cox into a behemoth, highlighted by the $4 billion all-cash transaction for DealerTrack. Yesterday, Cox announced that Schwartz would step down as president and take on a new role within the Cox Enterprises organization, overseeing the Cox family's investments as CEO of the Cox Family Office. Steve Rowley, executive vice president of the Cox Business Commercial Unit, will succeed Schwartz as president of the dealership services giant starting Monday. So what's ahead for Cox, for Schwartz, and the industry? And what's been the most fulfilling over the course of the last decade? We've reached Sandy Schwartz in Atlanta. Well, Sandy Schwartz, as some may know, is a publisher, and he knows a good story when he hears one. And Sandy Schwartz, this is a good story.
I don't know, Jason. I might argue with you. I don't know if it's a great story, but you know what? If you think it is, that means it's good enough for me.
So tell me the story. You're deciding that your current position will transition into a new position, a pretty exciting one that we'll talk about in a minute. But tell me how we got there.
Well, you know, Jason, I've never made a secret of this. I'm 67 years old, and at Cox, you know, we look at succession and people who have big jobs like I do, and we say, you know, what's next and who's next, and we groom leaders. And I just felt there were a lot of things. It's the right time in my life to move on to something else. It's also the right time in Cox Automotive's life to get a leader who's going to be here for, you know, the next 5-10 years as we change this industry along with you and many, many others. And so Alex Taylor, our CEO, and I have been talking about this really for a couple of years. And at the beginning of this year, I said, you know, I just think it's time to move on and kind of, you know, set the new tone. And we both agreed. And then he came to me with an idea of something different to do. But that's how we got to me bringing in a new president of Cox Automotive. And that's going to be Steve Rowley, who's been with Cox for over 10 years and is just a great leader. The automotive industry is just going to love him. I really mean that.
So you've known Steve for a long time. Tell me a little bit about Steve, because we don't know Steve Rowley.
Yeah, I not only have been with him for a long time, you know, he's been with the company for over 10 years. I've watched him both from afar and close. So first of all, the most important thing about Steve Rowley is he is a car guy. You know, he may not be working in the automotive industry, which I want to point out, I wasn't also.
That's right.
When I came over to run Manheim. But Steve's a car guy. He loves cars. He's been, you know, reading Car and Driver and everything you can think of for a long time. I told him, you better start reading Automotive News. And of course, he will. But Steve is a car guy first. But most importantly, he's a leader. He has done everything from take a company public to be in a startup to work for a big telecom company. And then he came to Cox Enterprises to work at Cox Communications. And he eventually moved his way up to running what we call Cox Business Services. And that's a company that a lot of our dealers would know because they provide connectivity for small to medium-sized businesses. And so they may do everything, you know, in the dealership for connectivity from Wi-Fi to phone systems to everything. And Steve has just built a team around him. And I have to tell you, he has grown the Cox business plan. He has grown it to $1 billion. To $2 billion in revenue. They're now racing to $3 billion. And what's most important, you know, about Steve as I watch him is just the way he develops a culture. He's open, honest, direct like I am, but he just builds culture, builds people. And, you know, the best story I can tell you about him I think is really great. You know, we all do staff meetings. You do them, I do them. every morning, almost every morning when he's in town, I will come in our dining center, and Jason, you and I have been there together. I'll come in our dining center, and he is there with his direct reports, whoever's in town. And they just have breakfast together every morning, and they talk, and you can tell the camaraderie, and they're planning, and, you know, they do their regular meetings, but he just has a great style about him. And I think that, you know, the dealers and the lenders and the captives and the OEM, I think everyone's going to really see him as a great addition to the automobile industry.
You're a relationship guy. You have great relationships with all of the leading public dealers and private dealers, frankly. That's what you've been known for in addition to your strategy. How difficult is it to pass the baton to a guy who's a non-automotive guy in the midst of a lockdown, who can't build relationships and press the flesh?
So it's really funny. This morning, I've probably texted, talked to, and emailed, including you. You were one of my first calls to, I'm not exaggerating, 50 to 60 people. I mean, clearly, we're going to send a letter to all of our, you know, all of our partners and all of our clients. But there's a number. I've got a lot of good friendships and a lot of great personal and business partnerships. And every single person has said to me, okay, when am I going to get to meet them? How are we going to do that? So it's not easy, but you know what? You and I thought this was not even going to be possible. We talked, I think, the first week of the pandemic. There's ways to do this. We're going to do it through Zoom calls. We're going to do it a few in-person things where it makes sense and so forth. But, you know, you just do what you have to do. And thank you for, I take those as kind words that you use on relationships. You know, this is a relationship business. And, you know, I tell everyone that I've never worked directly in sales, but I can sell anything once. But if it doesn't work, I can't sell it again. So I look at relationships two ways. I mean, one is respect. And yes, there are relationships. And I have some of my best friends, in addition, you know, to you and many others who I could name, who I've met in the industry. But let's also remember that, you know, just because you're a nice guy and you can build a relationship doesn't necessarily mean you always want to work together. You have to have products that work and you have to have integrity. And so, you know, I kind of feel that I've had the good fortune of steering a ship that, you know, has given us great resources, allowed us to build, allowed us to acquire. And to me, you know, it's got to be a win-win. It's so funny. I was talking to someone the other day who was talking about taking one of our products, and I said to him, look, this has to be a win-win. It has to work for us. It has to work for you. And, you know, I think that's more in a relationship than just trying to be a nice guy.
You have built, you have acquired, as you said, and at some stages throughout the course of the last, I would say, 5 years, you've admitted to me that it was a fairly big elephant that was swallowed. Was the elephant too big for Cox Automotive, or was the digestion particularly hard for some elements of this business to be pieced together?
No, the biggest problem, Jason, quite frankly, was none of those. It was patience. We're living in a world of instant gratification, and my favorite story about the day that we acquired DealerTrack, where half of the Cox, not half, but, you know, a number of Cox Automotive companies called me, and they said, their CEOs called me and said, I am so glad that you acquired DealerTrack, because now you're going to turn them into a company like yours. And then I would pick up the phone, and the next call would be, I am so glad you acquired them, because now maybe you can learn some from, and you guys can act like DealerTrack and get some of the things done they do. It's hard to bring companies together, cultures together, but most importantly, it's hard to bring technology together. And so, you know, we swallowed a lot. Mark O'Neill, who I have tremendous respect for and one of my dearest friends and who I think has done just tremendous things for the industry, you know, he and I decided we were going to put these two together and we were going to acquire them and we were going to do what we had to do. If I had to do over again, I might have moved a little faster in some ways. But to me, it really wasn't too much and it really even wasn't the indigestion. It was, you just have to have patience. I mean, you can't go faster on certain things. And I had dealers who said, well, now that you've got DealerTrack, you've got everything now. So I guess tomorrow everything will be integrated. Well, it just doesn't work that way. It takes a while. And so, you know, did we fumble some areas? Probably. Could we have done better? Probably. But I think we're getting to a good place. And at the end, it's back to what you and I talked about. The stuff has to work and it has to be a win-win for both the dealers and ourselves.
Why would patience have been underrated as you went into some of these situations?
Because I want everything to work tomorrow. You know, I'm I believe you get the pieces, and you know you want to get down the road and move fast. And you know sometimes you need a little more patience when you're building companies and when you're not building from scratch. You know, we've had some real competitive threats to some of our companies through the years. I mean, think about AutoTrader.com 25 years ago, the threat we were to the industry you and I came out of, newspapers. It just takes a little while when you're putting things together. When you have a clean sheet of paper, sometimes it's easier. So I just think it's, you know, patience at the right time. And you know, great leaders push hard in certain places and ease off in certain places. And I go back and rate my performance over the last 10 years. And, you know, I give myself high marks in some places, and other places say, God, I was stupid. Why did I think that was going to work that fast? So I think it's all a matter of how you do it. And in the end, it's just got to work. And, you know, we're all getting there. This isn't just about Cox Automotive. Who would have thought, Jason, you know, 5 months ago, and you and I talk regularly, who would have thought 5 months ago that we could transact business the way we are? Now, I thought so, but I had to see it work before we did. And we're on the road, and we can't go back now.
And that's kind of where you're leaving the company is in a position to pivot to an even faster digital model, as you told us just last month. What does that way forward look like for you?
Yeah, it looks like a few things. So first of all, on the wholesale side, we've gone to 100% digital sales. We should not slide back. Now, if someone says to me, you're never going to run a car through a lane again, you know, we might. I mean, there may be a reason to in some places. But people, we need to be safer in the lanes. We need to be faster in the lanes. We don't need to use, you know, as much manpower as we do. So on the wholesale side, it's clearly a digital future, which we've been doing now for months. On the retail side, it's being able to do what you and I talked about at great length during the forum, and that is touchless delivery, touchless transactions. We've got to make it easier on people. I just have to tell you, I talked to someone yesterday who had a horror story of they went and bought a car and spent 2 hours in the dealership when they were told it'd be 30 minutes. At the end of it, they said, oh, you can't take your car because there's a recall on it. We don't have the part. I mean, we need to know those things before we even ask someone to come to the dealership. So to me, on the retail side, it's making sure we can get through all of that and as much of that as an individual wants to do before they even get to the store, if they're ever going to go to the store. You and Ernie Garcia and I had a great conversation. We didn't agree on everything, but what we agreed on was people want to shop for cars the way they shop for everything else. And, you know, my line, which you're tired of hearing, is cars aren't like shoes, but people expect to shop for them that way. So we just got to get better with that shopping experience. And you are right, Jason. For me personally, I feel like I've got us to a point where it's time for someone else to take it and move it forward and move it forward even faster. And I believe we have the right guy to do that.
Talk to me a little bit about subscriptions. You and I first started talking about that a number of years ago when you toured me around the Clutch facility and all of the technology that was percolating there. What do you think of subscriptions now?
I think there's still a place for it. It's going to be a little while. First of all, I think COVID has a little bit to do with, you know, do you want to keep switching cars, which right now I don't think any of us does. And I think that who owns the car is going to be the key of what subscription service will work in the future. Someone has to balance sheet those cars. But I still believe if the economy changes and as we come into some rough times, that there are going to be people who either can't afford to buy or lease them fully and would want to get them on a shorter term basis. And that's where subscription might fit in. That's my thinking.
When you think about the last 5 months, and you and I talked back in March for this podcast, and reflecting, how hard has this year been?
Oh, boy, that is such a wonderful question. It's been very, very hard in a lot of ways, and at the same time, very fulfilling. And so, you know, we have been able, I mean, 2 years ago, Jason, I don't know that Cox Automotive would have been able to do this. I don't know that we were set up technologically or even the way we were structured. We've made a lot of gains over the past few years, and this has worked flawlessly for us in terms of technology and how we meet. The difficulty, I think, that we're having, what's really hard is the same thing that's hard about life. It's hard to be in your house if that's where you are. It's especially hard if you have children. Now we're thinking now of, well, we may not be going back to school, and how are we going to teach them? And so I think the difficulties are less with what's been thrown at us because we've all been able to maneuver it. We all crave human, you know, interaction, which we don't have. God, you and I were talking just recently about when are we going to get back together for dinner? You know, you and I used to have regular dinners. I mean, you know, that's killing me that I don't get to sit with you and hear all the stuff going on and hear about your family and everything. So that part, you know, we're getting through. I think the tougher part of this is, boy, I thought this was going to be a couple months. You know, we're going to be here for sure until the first of the year. And we just have to figure out ways to, A, be safer, and then, B, to get around some of the more difficult parts that need to be done. But I do have to tell you, we have not skipped a beat in product or technology or areas where I know we're pushing forward. Now, it breaks my heart when we have to furlough people or lay people off. But then again, you know, we're a for-profit business just like everybody else out there, and we have to do what's best for the enterprise because that's what's going to be best for the people who work there. So it's kind of a mixed bag on your question.
How are you going to help Alex? You know, I've been in close contact with Alex Taylor and you and the rest of the Cox leadership team, but what's the role that you'll play as the head of the family office?
Well, it's really interesting. When Alex came to me and we were talking about this, he said to me, so you're going to think I'm crazy, but I have a role that I really think, you know, is extremely important. And we've had a couple of heads of the family offices and they've ended in different ways. But number one, you know, we have trusts and things that just have to be worked on. We'll do that. We have investments the family has. And then number three, the most important thing is just intergenerational, you know, moving the family down. We're a fourth generation family. So all the auto dealers who are out there, and I love every one of you, many, many of them, some are first generation, many are second, many are third, some are even fourth. If you do all the statistics on family businesses, it's rare that you get to the fourth generation of family. Alex Taylor, Jim Kennedy, who's the chairman, Jim and I have worked together 35 years. Their goal is to keep this Cox Enterprises and all of our Cox businesses in the family. And so my role is going to be, let's figure out how we do that. Now, you know, we have experts who do that. We have lawyers and others, but we're going to try to figure out the best way to do that. The second thing, Jason, I think is if you would go look at the top 50 families in the country, you would find a depth and breadth of different people who run these family offices. In our case, you know, you have had a lot of exposure to the Cox family through the years. A lot of that's been you and I, you know, working on projects together and so forth, and you've been in our building and you've met Alex and you know, you sat on a few different things to see the inside of it. And for us, I don't take this lightly, but they want someone they can trust. And I've known the Cox family for 35 years. I think I've been a great steward for the family. And, you know, it's rare that kind of at my age and, you know, kind of when you're at a certain position that you go into something else and you're excited about it. I'm just really excited about this opportunity. And I've had some notes from the family here in the last week, and especially today. And so I think the role I can play is the technical part in getting the right people to do that, and then also helping the family being a trusted advisor to them. And then also I'm going to stay on Alex's senior team. So I'm going to stay close to the automotive business, and the cable business, and our Cox Enterprises. And I think it's going to keep me going pretty well for a while.
And you're going to remain a publisher, correct?
I don't have the title of publisher because I have two publishers. But yeah, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and the Dayton Daily News both report up to me. And I'll tell you, that's also exciting. You know, Jason, I go way back in newspapers like you do, and it's a love of mine. And, you know, we're trying to figure out the way forward. What does this digital world look like? So I'm going to have a little more time. I'm not sure that Donna Hall and Janet Collier are as excited about it as I am. When I told them, I said, you know, I got some good news and some bad news. Bad news, I'm going to be around a little more. And they laughed. But, yeah, it is a love of mine. And we got to figure that future out. Look, I don't think there's ever been a time where newspapers, whether it's the Atlanta Journal-Constitution or Automotive News, have been more important to their communities or their industries as they have been during this pandemic. And, you know, shame on us if we let our communities down and don't do what we need to do to inform them about everything going on.
You've had such an interesting ride at Cox, and I wonder if you step back and think about some of your more memorable moments. I've got to believe that your time at Manheim was probably incredibly formative for you.
Well, today during the call to all of our Cox Automotive leaders, I told them that Jim Kennedy asked me about 10 years ago. He said, hey, I want you to go run Manheim. And I said, no, I'm good running Cox Media Group. I don't really need to. And he said, no, I want you to go do this. And Jim has that great charm. And also, you know, when he wants you to do something, you like to do it because you like to make him happy. But one of the things he said to me was, he said, I want you to go in there and tell me whether we should sell this business. And I got, you know, I knew a little about Manheim because I'd run Cox Business Development, but I said, why do you say that? And he said, I never want to happen to me again what happened to newspapers. You know, they just dropped like a bowling ball off the Empire State Building. And I said, okay. And I went in, and I spent about 3 or 4 months talking to great general managers and other leaders and even some consultants. And I came back to Jim and I said, have your answer about whether we ought to sell it. And he said, great, what should we do? I said, we should invest and build because the automotive business is great and we should expand this thing to retail services and to so many other areas. And the family has done that. They've given us the money and the resources and the patience. You know, I talked about patience earlier to invest. And I think we've built a business that's important to the auto industry. And, you know, this isn't about us being, you know, big shots. This is about being useful to the industry and being partners with the industry. And you know, I've had some great calls. I'm not going to be a name dropper and tell you with who, but it's been really gratifying to talk to some of the real important people in this business who, you know, have said nice things to me. And it's not about me. It's about what we've done as a team here.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're still going to be hanging around the automotive scene, if only on the fringes. But Sandy Schwartz, you have been an absolute champion for this industry, and you've been a champion for Automotive News. So thank you so much for your time, and we just wish you the best of luck with whatever you're going to do. And you can still go to NADA when it happens.
I can. I don't know if that's going to be next year. Well, Jason, I want to tell you one thing as I leave here, and like I'm going to get really skewered by some people who are going to think that you're paying me to say this, but from the minute I started full-time in the automotive business more than 10 years ago, I have not missed one issue of Automotive News. Now, I don't always read it the second it's out, although sometimes I do on the, you know, when I get the digital edition, but I read it every single week because I really believe that you guys keep the business, you know, informed. We all have individual important parts that we play, and you guys do a great job with it. And I every once in a while tell you when I don't agree with something you guys do, but I've read every edition, if you can believe that, since I've been in the business for over 10 years.
Well, thank you. Save a line item in that Cox family office for a subscription going forward.
I will. Thanks, Jason. It's great to talk to you.
We reached Sandy Schwartz in Atlanta. And that's Daily Drive for Wednesday, July 29th. For breaking news, go to autonews.com. And for nearly 100 stories, go to autonews.com/dailydrive. We'll be back Thursday. And now, a word from our sponsor.
Give inventory an express one-way ticket off your lot with TradeRev, the dealer-to-dealer digital auction platform revolutionizing automotive sales. Selling with TradeRev gives you the speed, ease, and convenience of a live digital auction combined with the power and scale of ADESA's physical and digital marketplaces. Why settle for a single-channel solution when TradeRev and ADESA give you so much more? ADESA and TradeRev's combined buyer base is 150,000 strong, meaning you get more eyes, more bids, and more money on every sale. TradeRev helps you move fast. Launch digital auctions in minutes right from your lot and send non-sales off-site to sell through ADESA's digital and physical channels. TradeRev understands your bottom line. Get every dollar out of your trades with profits that consistently beat the industry average. Enjoy peace of mind. No arbitrations and no hassles with TradeRev's optional seller protection plan. Start selling with TradeRev today and watch your auction inventory ride off into the sunset. Learn more about our pricing plans and introductory sell fees as low as $0 at traderev.com/gone and join the revolution today. That's TradeRev, TradeRev.com/gone.